The county's number one talk show, the 9 till noon show on Highland Radio.
And now it's time for the talk of the Northwest, the 9 to noon show with Greg Hughes on Highland Radio.
Hello and a very good morning to you. It is 3 minutes past nine, just turning 4 minutes past nine on this Monday morning. It's the 20th of March, 2023. Another St. Patrick's Day behind us, another Mother's Day behind us. I hope you had a lovely weekend and hopefully you were able to get out and about and enjoy the festivities. The weather stayed dry for the most part, I think, didn't it? Certainly in the parts of the county I observed. And if you're a mum, I hope you were treated like a queen yesterday. I'm thinking on those two as well. It's a tough old day, isn't it, if you've lost your mum, Mother's Day, because they mean so much to us. And there's that mixed emotions, isn't there? There's the joy of mums and new mums enjoying that experience, and then time for reflection on the fact that your own mum's not there. So it's always a mixed bag of emotions, Mother's, Father's Day and days like that, aren't they? But anyway, hopefully you're all okay and you all got through the weekend and we're back for another week. And it's a busy one as always, you know that. I say it every day, but it's true. I try and avoid saying it, but I find myself saying it anyway. We want you involved in all the conversations though, and to raise your own. Anything you want to talk about, 086 60 25,000. That's the WhatsApp and text number, 086 60 25,000. Or you can call us too, don't you know, on 07491 25,000. Caroline and Anya taking your calls this Monday morning. And if you're an emailer, you prefer to give us an email, we'll send it off to comments@highlandradio.com. And as always, I invite you, if you want to switch on your smart TV, your Fire Stick, watch us on YouTube. We broadcast every day, 3 hours a day, 5 days a week on YouTube, Highland Radio Ireland, and across our Facebook pages. And more of you watch a million minutes live every single month, which is fantastic. And we really do appreciate this support on that platform. It's just to give everyone who wants to engage in the show an opportunity to do so. But of course, you can comment on our socials as well, as Michael has already. Good morning, Michael. Thanks for the nice wishes. Right, let's look at the papers this morning. Lots of sport, as you can imagine. What a mixed bag of sport it was, depending on what you were interested in. Donegal, the inevitable for me yesterday anyway, against Mayo. Disappointing, wasn't it? What next? And then you've got that old Jim McGuinness story rumbling in the background and what have you. It's a tough old time for now. Anyway, things might change heading into the summer. Brendan Devaney, of course, is joining us to preview his DL Debate podcast, and we'll run a few things past him too as well. If you've any comments, 086, or questions, sorry, 086 60 25,000. But if you're a rugby fan, wow, Six Nations Grand Slam double, the seniors, of course, the regular team, and the under-20s. So not only are things really good now, and what an achievement it is for a country of our size to be the best in the world, and the best, consistently good, but the best, and then to have a new crop of young players coming through, it bodes well for the future too. It really is remarkable when you think such a significant sport for us to be so good at it. So I think lots of people maybe, although I was going to say lots of people went into that game yesterday thinking, oh boy, you know, they're going to ruin this for us, aren't they? We're going to ruin that part. But I think there was more confidence this time, that a lot of people didn't have that niggling doubt in the back of their mind. But brilliant performance, brilliant weekend of sport too. And well, it's depending on what soccer team you support, a mixed all bag. Finn Harps got their first win of the season. I think great things are happening there, you know. A bit of consistency this year, picking up the first win on the road, I believe. And just the right people seem to be behind that club at the moment, and huge support from fans in terms of ticket sales on the day and season tickets, so the future seems to be bright there as well. All right, back to news anyway. The Derry People, Donegal News this morning. A senior IFA official in Donegal says a potato shortage and job losses could be on the way unless there's an urgent intervention to help the farming sector. Farmers met in Dublin recently to discuss ways to keep the industry afloat, but with land rental, fertiliser, fuel and storage costs at an all-time high, fears are mounting that many potato growers could be forced out of business. Donegal Logue is Donegal's IFA potato chairman and has said farmers will have big decisions to make in the coming months. If you have an insight into that, are you a potato farmer on the fence? Let us know. 086 60 25,000. The Derry News this morning. The register of properties affected by defective concrete products and blocks established by Derry City and Strabane District Council should not be restricted to the minerals mica, pyrite and pyrrhotite, according to a member of Donegal County Council. Councillor Frank McBurty, himself an affected homeowner, said it was vital Derry City and Strabane District Council's definition be widened to include all deteriorous materials and all reactive sulphide minerals. Let's turn our attentions to the Nationals now and this eviction ban story. I think this is going to be a big problem for the government. It already is, but A lot of people are going to have to make a decision in a couple of votes in the Dáil in the coming weeks. We'll read on here in the Irish Times. Sinn Féin is considering another motion of on the eviction ban before it expires at the end of the month, as the opposition seeks to maximise pressure on the government. The Dáil's already set to debate a Sinn Féin motion on extending the ban this week, which now looks to be the first in a attritional series of votes which will test the government's majority and resolve under sustained criticism. It will test, too, really, how independent independents are. You know, I think a lot of people would vote independent with the view that sometimes they'll support the government, sometimes that they won't, but they'll hold the government to account. They're an independent voice, not aligned to politics. But some independents, not all, some independents are not. They can be, I was going to say bought, because that has, but that has connotations. They might be bought, if you know what I mean, investment in their area or what have you, and support the government. But this is one of those issues where those resolves will be tested. I can just see the government wobbling on this, realising that they may well lose this vote and saying, we're going to reverse that decision for 6 months and spend the next 6 months ramping up all other plans. I just don't see how they can get through the Dáil on this one, to be honest with you. Yesterday, the Labour Party said it would put down a motion of no confidence in government before the end of the month if it did not change course. Sinn Féin's housing spokesperson Owen O'Brien said it had a slot in private members' time on Tuesday week and was considering all options for that, with a decision to be made later this week. Sinn Féin would really need to win one of those, though, because they keep failing and it doesn't seem to get the traction that maybe they would might hope. Focus will also now shift to independent TDs, especially those who usually support the government. The regional group, including TDs who regularly vote with the government, such as Kildare South, Cathal Barry, and Tipperary's Michael Lowry, is assessing its options. There is a lot of independents undecided as to how they'll vote and what they'll do, and we'll make a decision after we've finalised our amendment, Mr. Lowry said. But how can independents vote in favour of the government, for example, if members of the government will not be voting with the government? And that is exactly the case, because Green Party's Nessa Hourigan, I always struggle to pronounce her name, my apologies, I'll get it correct by the time I read through this article because it would come to me. She says she is going to vote with Sinn Féin on the eviction ban. Tougher sanctions loom for Green Party rebel Nessa Hourigan, who has said she will vote against the government in a Sinn Féin motion on extending the eviction ban. This is despite her previous comments that voting with an opposition motion would not actually reverse the end to the eviction ban. Green Tea Party TDs and senators will meet tonight to consider the Sinn Féin motion, which will be voted on in the Dáil tomorrow. There have been suggestions Ms. Hourigan could see tougher sanctions from the parties, as it will be the third time she's voted against the government. Last week, Sinn Féin approached all independent and opposition TDs on the vote. It's understood no contact was made with Ms. Hourigan. Okay, so as I say, she's got a bit of a history there. I mean, if you're consistently voting against your party, maybe it's time to consider a new party, I would suggest. Right, let's see. I've tucked two papers in together there now. I don't know how I've pulled that one off. Right, that goes there and that goes there. On to the Sun now, the Sun newspaper. And some €56 million worth of illegal coal and other fuel is being smuggled into Ireland each year. And the cost of living crisis is heating up demand for dodgy energy, New Solid Fuel Merchants Ireland is calling for additional enforcement measures to crack down on cowboy dealers. But a lot of people here, I mean, a lot of people here are just driving over the border and filling the boot or a trailer with coal and coming back the way. Are they smuggling? I don't know what they're doing. SFMI said the smuggled solid fuels are being sold online via social media and door to door. Smugglers are increasingly bringing solid fuels such as coal across the border from Northern Ireland, where VAT is charged at a lower rate and there is no carbon tax in place. It said an estimated 100,000 tonnes of coal with a retail value of €56 million were being smuggled, resulting in a total loss of VAT and carbon tax of €16.2 million to the Irish purse. Now, I don't want to be too predictable in this, right? But it's very handy if you live around most parts of this county to nip across the border, and a lot of the premises are very well laid out. It's almost like getting a McDonald's, picking up coal, getting that coal and bringing it in. And then people say, well, it's the wrong thing to do. Of course it's the wrong thing to do for people in terms of coal suppliers that have to adhere to very stringent laws in this country. Of course, I have great sympathy for them. But again, if you were minded to not do it because of the environment, you might think, well, it goes back to our conversation on Friday about Eamon Ryan flying around the world in business class in a jet. You might say, well, stuff it. Why should I not just nip across the border and get some coal? Now, as I say, I do understand that that has an impact on businesses in the Republic of Ireland who have to do, adhere to certain rules and regulations, very stringent ones. But if it's only the government you're worried about, you would go, you know what? I'm going to do it because they're doing it. So why shouldn't I? I'm not condoning or condemning, by the way. I'm just laying it out as the way we would talk if we weren't on the radio. You know, we'd just have a frank conversation, wouldn't we? And that's what we like to do here. The Irish Star this morning, Russian President Vladimir Putin made a surprise visit to the occupied port city of Mariupol over the weekend, state news agencies reported. The visits came days after the International Criminal Court issued an arrest warrant for the Russian leader, accusing him of war crimes. The trip to Mariupol was the first trip for the president to the Ukraine territory that Moscow illegally annexed in September. Mariupol became a symbol of defiance after outgunned and outmanned Ukrainian forces held out in a steel mill there for nearly 3 months before Moscow finally took control of it in May. They surrendered and they were due to be tried and probably executed, but they escaped that because of a prisoner swap deal. But this comes, there's a lot, awful lot going on in the world at the moment in terms of what's happening in Russia, and I wouldn't say, it's not easy not to be worried about it, because, well, let's start with what's happening. There is a war between, and we talked about this proxy war. I didn't really hear that phrase used much before. We used it on this program a couple of months after this war started, between Russia and the West. Now we've got President Xi of China going over to visit Vladimir Putin in Russia, which is pretty important, I think. They have their own issues with America, particularly over Taiwan and what have you. You've got Vladimir Putin looking to build allies, a new world order kind of, between he, the Chinese, some South African countries, South American countries, you know, really quite significant groups of people. And then there's this war of attrition that's going on that has led to a shortage of firepower, really, effectively. Europe is running out of weapons to supply Ukraine, and they're having to bring in special measures to try and up the manufacturing of them. It's the West's position, really, that seems to be weakening here. So hopefully maybe the Chinese president can talk some sense into all of them, because we don't need this escalating any further than it already is. It's horrific what's happening at the moment in terms of the loss of life, and for what. Finally, you've got to hand it to Elon Musk. He knows how to get publicity, and he knows who to poke in order to get it, because Twitter has started auto-replying to media queries with a poo emoji. You might be familiar with that emoji. It's got eyes and a mouth, but it is, to all intents and purposes, a pile of poo. Owner Elon Musk announced the new strategy in a tweet yesterday morning after a Times of London journalist complained this was the response she had received to a question. Musk did not explain the reasoning behind the bizarre stance. The Irish government here last year criticised Twitter's treatment of Irish employees after 140 Dublin-based staff were made redundant. But Elon Musk is in a war with mainstream media. He's of that an opinion. And this is perfect, right? Because the media sends press releases to Twitter, probably trying to get some on-the-record response to a critical story of Twitter that they might have. And in return, they're sent a poo. And they don't ignore it. They write about it. They say, oh, this is disgraceful. Elon Musk, this is how he treats us. And it's a double win for Elon Musk, because then people who have a distrust and a dislike of the mainstream media go, well, fair play to you, Elon. So it's a win-win. It's a two-fingered salute to the press. And then he gets to stick up another two fingers as they cry about their treatment. You got to hand it to him. He does know how to market. All right. And he's forcing those that dislike him to give him further publicity. That's how you do it, folks. Now, just to let you know, if you're on the roads this morning, that there is a collision at Drumkeen involving a couple of vehicles. I'm not really quite sure as to how severe or not it is. We hope it's not serious, of course. It's a very distressing thing to be involved in or to see. But anyway, there is a collision at Drumkeen. There's tailbacks in both directions, so approach that area with caution. So if you're just heading up Lurgy Brack now or just coming in turning left there at Kilross Junction. Just be aware that as you approach Drumkeen, traffic will be backed up. And as I say, we'll keep you updated as to the details of that. I'm not sure how serious or not it is at the moment, but we do know it is causing tailbacks, so please be careful. Right, now, two separate investigations are underway after a video was passed to Gardaí showing a motorist using a car to maim and kill wild deer. The attack was carried out by a man shouting with a distinct West of Ireland accent, it's reported, but the location of the attack has not been identified. Now, Gardaí and the National Parks and Wildlife Service are both investigating under Operation Bambi, which set up 10 years ago to protect Irish deer herds. Damien Hannigan is press officer with the Irish Deer Commission, and he joins us now. Good morning to you. How are you keeping, Damien?
Good morning, Greg. I'm very good, thank you.
I haven't seen this video. I'm not going to lie. It's not the type of video I'd watch. I'm not sure if you had, Damien, but if you have, or even if you haven't, I'm sure you heard of its content. What exactly was going on?
Yeah, it's like I think first of all, in the Irish Deer Commission, we would condemn this video. It's cruel and barbaric, and you know, I think it's something we've never seen, thankfully, before in Ireland. But if I can paint the picture, maybe for your listeners, in terms of the video shows, an individual appears to be an individual on their own driving down a narrow country road. From the clock on the vehicle, we can see it's 3:15 a.m. in the morning, and in the distance, you can see a number of deer. And he, by what he says in the video, he then accelerates towards the deer, and we can see they're 5 fallow deer, so they're, and a female deer with some juvenile deer as well. So I suppose deer, Greg, initially when they see vehicle lights, that the strong lights can dazzle the deer, so that initially the deer are startled, and then they start to run, because the deer are a flight animal, they run from danger. But as this individual accelerates towards the deer, they desperately try to escape away from, but unfortunately he catches up with them, and initially he effectively runs over one of the female deer. Wow. And then he moves on further to run over a second deer. So a very disturbing video, and something we've never seen before.
It's horrific for anyone to be capable of that, isn't it?
It is. It just begs, you know, in terms of, you know, why an individual would do something like this. You know, it's really... again, you know, I said the video is very graphic, and that's something I'd wish anyone to see. But it's you know, from what the person is saying during the video, you know, you could draw a conclusion that, you know, this issue, you know, this person has some issues there, you know, in terms of, you know, that why would someone knowingly want to, kill deer in that distressing manner, and you know, and possibly causing damage to their own vehicle at the same time. Well, it seems quite a large vehicle, like a Jeep or a van, and it must have caused some damage to their own vehicle as well. So it's just a beggar's belief, really.
Do we have any information since this story went to press as to where this may have happened, or is it just maybe the West of Ireland?
Yeah, I think it's really that, Greg, at the moment, in the sense that we can see certain things from the video. For example, fallow deer at particular times of the year, the colour of their coat changes. So to the trained eye, when you look at this video, you can see it happen during the winter months. So initially, we were made aware of this video in July 2022, and it's only come to media attention now. But at the time, you know, as I said, the colour of the coat on the deer and the fallow deer would tell us that it was actually during the winter months. So We don't have an exact date, and there have been suggestions that it took place on the west coast of Ireland. But again, there's no evidence to suggest that. And, you know, we'd very much appeal to anyone that would have information about this is to report it to their local Garda station or the National Parks and Wildlife Service conservation ranger.
I mean, obviously, there's been lots of conversations about deer and deer numbers, but I don't even want to go down that route in case it comes across that in some way I'm trying to justify this kind of action, and I certainly wouldn't want to come across like that.
Yeah, absolutely. Look, I think you have said, you know, and your listeners in Donegal obviously will be aware of traffic accidents on the road involving deer and so on, and I think there should be no conclusions drawn or parallels drawn in regard to this. This is just an individual setting out to inflict, you know, cruelty on what is, you know, a protected species, our largest land mammal, you know, an important part of our natural heritage. I don't think there should be any parallel drawn in regards to deer management. And as you mentioned, deer management has been a very topical issue, particularly in recent months. We've heard on a regular basis, comments from various sectors in regards to deer numbers. And, you know, I suppose deer management in itself, you know, is obviously a necessary activity, but deer management is very much about selective culling with regards to animal welfare and so on. So I don't think we can draw any comparison, as you said, Greg.
Yeah, indeed. Look, and I hope whoever's responsible for this is found, because it is a horrific thing to do to another living thing. So I might just park that and talk more generally about where we are at in terms of the work of the Irish Deer Commission, because one of your key objectives is to develop a sustainable and achievable deer management policy. We're not at that point yet. What concerns does your commission have? As I say, completely separate now to that last piece, but just whilst we are on the conversation, currently is the Irish Deer Commission calling on in terms of the management of our deer population?
Yeah, I think it's a very good question, Greg. And I think just in regards to deer management and how we manage deer numbers, it's really crucial that the decisions that we make around deer management are well-founded, scientific-based, and not kind of simply arbitrary seat-of-the-pants type comments that we might see from politicians or other sectors in regards to deer. While their comments may be well-intended in regards to accidents on the road or deer numbers, you know, the data that we receive from the National Parks and Wildlife Service each year, so hunters are required to make an annual declaration stating the number of deer, the county, the species, and so on. And from that data, we know in 2022, over 55,000 deer were culled in Ireland in the 12-month period up to February 28th. So that's a record deer cull. It's an increase of over 20% on the previous record set in 2019. Pre-pandemic. So we know already in Ireland a substantial amount of deer are being culled. And even in County Donegal, we can see that the most recent cull figure shows that 1,890 deer were culled in County Donegal, and predominantly red deer. And that's an increase of 33% over the previous record for the county.
And I don't know how can you phrase it when you're talking about so many animals being shot. Is that the right thing? Is that positive from the Deer Commission's perspective? Are we doing it correctly, humanely, in a right way to, you know, sustain a deer population, but at the same time, too, to protect as much as we can landowners and road users?
Yeah, look, I think it's. I think the management of wildlife is always an emotive topic, you know. But I think in the absence of a natural predator, it does fall on man to manage deer numbers at sustainable levels. Because while deer are an asset in the countryside, you know, and very much something to behold when seen, when the numbers become unsustainable, they can have negative consequences for farming, forestry, and the wider ecosystem. So it does fall on man to manage their numbers. I suppose from an Irish context, we don't know how many deer that we have in Ireland because we've never undertaken a census. So as to the fact, are we culling too many and not enough? Or, you know, it's really unknown at this stage. So there is a process currently underway in regards to a national consultation that has just completed in recent weeks in regards to getting the views of different stakeholders in regards to deer management.
Which I mean, there's really a couple of things, though, the things that confuses me about this, and I won't hold you much longer, Damien, is we don't really know. We don't know the deer population in this country. I don't think there's ever been a census or any proper assessment of that. And then also, we don't know how many deer outside of the numbers that you have were illegally killed. I think unless we kind of get a grasp of all of that, how can you properly manage something unless you have all the numbers?
Absolutely. And I think just realistically, and it's a very good point, Greg, that you make, is that 55,000 doesn't include the vast number of deer that have been illegally killed or even those involved in road traffic accidents on our roads. But I think in regards to, you know, there's certain anecdotal evidence that we would see on the ground in regards to our members that are managing deer around the country. And what that would point to is, in terms of the anecdotal evidence, not anyway scientific, but it would point to is that we have specific areas of the country where deer are a problem. So if you take, for example, the county of Wicklow, over one-third of the entire national cull takes place in the county of Wicklow. If we include the counties of Wicklow, Waterford, Tipperary, Kerry, Cork, and Donegal, that accounts for 75% of the national cull. So that suggests to us that you know, deer are more present in these counties than maybe in other counties. And then even within those counties, there will be areas where deer are managed at sustainable level, because we have over 6,500 licensed deer hunters in Ireland who undertake a very important role in terms of managing deer numbers. But, you know, so within those counties, the vast majority of areas are sustainable, but it's the areas that are not managed at adequate levels is we do need
that's it. And it's not simply how many of them are, it's how we, I mean, there are studies that show they have a really strong positive impact on biodiversity, but only if they're managed in a certain way, not merely by limiting their numbers or not limiting their numbers, or by fencing areas off or not fencing them off. But I believe Charlie McConnell-Logue, as Minister for Agriculture, launched a survey in this regard, so hopefully that pulls in proper information. So, you know, we don't really have to be speculating, do you know? We can make decisions based on facts and figures.
Absolutely. And I mentioned earlier on, Greg, is that the decisions that we make must be well-founded. They must be scientific-based. They can't be simply arbitrary seat-of-the-pants comments. And, you know, deer, we would very much see deer as eco-engineers in the countryside when their numbers are at sustainable levels. And as you mentioned, there is evidence to show deer do benefit the countryside, including woodlands, when the numbers are sustainable. But it's when they become unsustainable that's where the issues and the conflicts happen. And it's really getting our handle around the numbers and densities of deer that we have in specific areas. Mm. I think it would take a lifetime if it's something we tried to do at a national level, because counting deer is quite difficult because of the type of terrain and habitats that they frequent. So it's really about identifying what are the potential conflict areas and then applying a scientific, evidence-based approach to that, and sort of saying, okay, science does tell us this, rather than an actual sector group or a politician, or with respect to the politicians, is that telling us that we have a problem. You know, is that those kind of, while well-intended, those comments are often very much...
We want it based on science, not lobbying an opinion. You know, I mean, that's it, I think. Listen, Damien, it's been lovely chatting to you. Thanks for that. I appreciate your time. Damien Hannigan, who is press officer with the Irish Deer Commission. Greg, our state-of-the-art multi-million primary care centre in our area is causing a lot of stress to patients trying to get an appointment. Some people have to make 22 to 32 phone calls before they get an answer, and some don't get an answer. They have to present themselves to the centre. Could you please find out what's going on? Now, if we've held the name of the centre just for now as we make inquiries, because any named business individual has to have a right of reply, of course. Greg, as a small business owner, is there anyone else out there in the same situation as me? I'm basically facing financial closure. Business is good, but simply not good enough to continue to cover the energy costs I'm facing. If I increase my prices, people will simply go elsewhere, so I'll face closure anyway. I can no longer continue to put my savings into staying open. What's happening to this country? Well, look at... No, I mean, it's worrying if you feel you have to pump savings into a business. That business is failing, and it's sucking your resources. I mean, I would try increasing your prices and trust your customers, maybe. I think people understand. Explain, I'm having to increase my prices because of so-and-so. But maybe the increases is so much that you couldn't enjoy the support of your customers. It's a horrible situation that you're in, and I'm really sorry that you are in that situation, because obviously that leads to stress and anxiety and sleepless nights. And I hope you find a pathway to either exit the business and retain some of your savings, or to... maybe adjust your prices and continue to survive until things improve. Does anyone have or use DCI fuel cards? I've been with them a number of years. I got an email yesterday to say, as from the 13th of January 2024, my weekly rate will be 147 plus VAT, which makes it 181 per litre. It's currently 163. No, that must be 13th of... couldn't be 13th of January 2024. I don't know. Maybe do they have a set price? Do they... buy in advance? I don't know. But anyway, it's currently 163 at the pump. So where is the advantage in having one of these cards at those rates? I don't understand how that works, to be honest with you. I don't know how any... are you sure it was a legitimate email? How could a business set fuel rates at 13th of January 2024? Maybe that's how that business works. I'm not sure. I'm sorry. Someone out there knows the answer to that. What is the benefit in paying over the odds for diesel? I don't see any, really. We were talking last week too about the need for a burial ground, a new burial site for people of all denominations and none. And off the back of that, a caller texted us to say he'd like to be buried on his own private ground. Is there any law against it, or what's the procedure? Now, there was high-profile cases in this county in the past of people that wished to do that. I am not really quite sure. Wouldn't it be nice if you could be buried in a field that you have, under a tree that you liked or something along those lines? But presumably it's not allowed, is it? Anyone know what the situation is by law now? 086 60 25,000. Can you be buried on your own private ground? I presume there you can get some sort of a cert to do it, can you? I don't know. These are questions. If you can, what's the procedure? Maybe you've lost a loved one, and I'm sorry if you have, but maybe you have an insight into that and how all that works. Okay. Now, just in relation to that road traffic collision at Drumkeen, a two-vehicle road traffic collision. It was on the N13 at Drumkeen, as I mentioned. It happened at 8:30 this morning. Traffic is moving a little bit more freely now. There were traffic delays, but thankfully, no injuries were reported. So obviously, a stressful time for those involved. But thankfully, no injuries being reported by An Garda Síochána. Now, alarm is being expressed at the failure of the Department of Health to engage in consultation over the planned rollout of publicly funded IVF. The National Infertility Service Information Group says it's causing immense stress for men and women who are planning to start a family. The provision of free IVF was confirmed in the budget last year and is due to start in September. Now, Katrina Fitzpatrick is of the National Infertility Service Information Group. This is worrying. I mean, if you are going to be introducing legislation, it's just around the corner. You need to be consulting and engaging and giving information to those that are best placed to sort of have a positive input. And that would be a group like yours, Katrina. There's been little or no interaction, has there?
Good morning, Greg, and thanks for taking the time to discuss this topic. That's true. We were really pleased that public funding for IVF was announced in the budget last year. We're the only country in Europe that doesn't provide any funding for fertility services. We're a complete outlier in that regard. Pretty much every other country in Europe, and particularly those that we would benchmark ourselves against, would provide this funding and this service for people. The WHO defines infertility as a disease. So for any other disease in this country, you would go to, you know, your hospital, your GP, your local provider of a service, and you will get treatment. And that's not the case for people facing fertility issues in Ireland. So we're a total outlier in that regard. In fairness, it's in the programme for government, and there has been a lot of commitments from government in relation to rectifying this. And €10 million was announced as part of the budget last year to kick off in September. And while that's really welcome, like, fertility is a really complex area, and we're the only charity that actually provides services. So we provide helpline, web chat and support meetings. We've been involved in this area for 25 years. So we have like a wealth of knowledge in relation to what patients are going through, what issues people face. And we really want to be part of the consultation that the department, you know, with the Department of Health. What we really don't want to happen is, you know, next August, we're told, oh, come in and here's what we're going to do. And there's something that's 95% kind of baked at that stage that we're expected to endorse. And like we don't against, you know, the best in Europe, which is Belgium, the worst in Europe, which just behind us is Armenia. Like, who are we looking at in relation to this? Because €10 million is a really small amount of money when it comes to something like this. So it's not going to be floodgates open, doors open to everybody. There will, we know, be some restrictions. And also, as everybody knows, like, when you're trying to get pregnant or go through a pregnancy, like, it doesn't stop on December 31st. So we don't know where the funding goes for next year or what the plans for next year is, but it's completely impractical to look at this as just for 3 months. So we need to be part of the discussion for 2024 now as well.
But of course, I presume there are people then who are perhaps starting this journey, on the journey, planning to wait and to see what is to come. The lack of information is worrying, because this is not, you know, this is something that is, it requires a great deal of investment from people in terms of emotional energy and time and what have you. Like, this is kind of, I would expect we should know some stuff now. Do we know anything about how this will operate, how many people will be able to avail of the service, things like that, Katrina?
We don't know any of that practical information. And two really important points to make there. Like, you're 100% right. Yes, it's a huge investment from people emotionally and mentally, but also, like, economically, it's around €6,000 for a cycle of IVF. And what we are starting to get in emails and requests from people that we didn't really get up to now was talk about, you know, the cost of living crisis is eating into my savings, into my income. Now we're wondering, will we put off our treatment? And the huge issue, and like, I'm not a medic, but any person involved in this on the medical side will tell you, is time when it comes to fertility is absolutely crucial. Yeah. It's the number one thing. Don't waste time. Don't put it off. So all we can do is say to people, no, we have no information as to whether you would qualify or not. Go back to your medical professional. Don't spend any more time, you know, waiting on something that we have no information on. Get your advice from your medical professional. But, you know, it's really difficult for people who are looking at this thinking, but in 6 months' time, would I have qualified, and taking a chance? Like, taking a chance and starting a family is a really serious thing to take a chance on. Mm-hmm. And it needs to be looked at that. Mm-hmm. Like, other countries put in limitations, like, you know, what age you are. Do you have other children? Sometimes they look at people's BMI. And it also, they look at things like, are you entitled to a cycle or is it for a pregnancy? So you could have maybe a number of failed cycles, but would you be, you know, are they going to count it by cycles or by pregnancies? And some countries, you know, only allow couples. Some countries, you know, fund single people. So, like, we need to have these discussions with the department, you know, to kind of see what are they looking at. And we need to give them our experience in this. And there's other groups, I mean, there's sporting groups like LGBT Ireland and Equality for Children, and lots of other groups need to be part of this discussion. But it can't be done in a kind of a silo in an office that you take 10 million and you split it up, you know, whatever way. There needs to be a realistic, practical discussion with groups like ourselves to tell them our experience on the ground and to get a sense of what they are looking at for this year, but also for the following years. It's completely impractical that we'd only look at it in a 3-month silo anyway.
But do you get the impression that they are still fully committed to September?
We have been told that they are, and we haven't been told any different. Right. And I think the more we get out there and talk about it, and the more shows like yourself, which we really appreciate, talk about it as well, the more it holds them to account for that.
You see, the thing that would concern me is that this should be really positive. You know, they should be publishing information on this all the while, spinning it left, right and centre, because, you know, it's not often you can announce something new and that would be, you know, warmly received when you're in politics and in health. The silence is deafening on it from the HSE and government.
I agree with you. Like, it's a bit of a tricky one for government, because this is going to have to be provided through private clinics. Mm-hmm. There's nowhere in the public system that provides, you know, IVF treatment. There are 6 fertility hubs that have been recently set up. One isn't open yet. I mean, there's nowhere near Donegal. Your nearest is either to go to Galway or to Dublin. They all have very small amounts of staff in them, but they don't actually provide treatment. They kind of provide information and, you know, kind of blood tests and that type of thing. But I think the government find it kind of difficult to be paying money to private clinics to provide a service. So that might be a little bit tricky for them to swallow, but it's the only way of doing this. If we were to try and
they don't mind paying private hospitals in Northern Ireland. They don't mind paying private hospitals in Spain either. But I understand exactly where you're coming from. That it's how the message is delivered and how it's received. I get that, and you're quite right. And thanks for pointing out the long distance. And I think there was one lady in particular walked to Dublin to highlight the added stress and difficulty there is in someone in our part of the world here in the Northwest in accessing these treatments. It's a postcode lottery. Like, it shouldn't be like that.
No, completely. But then your only other option is to go private. And, like, it really shouldn't be the case. People who face fertility issues, and there's quite a spread between male, female and both partners, it's completely through no fault of their own. And it's something that they can realise quite late in life and suddenly realise that they're facing huge bills. And, like, we're a great country for talking about not getting pregnant, but we don't really talk about, if you want to have a family, how you start to put those building blocks in place. And actually, the NHS run a really good information campaign around being aware of your fertility. And they run it for people, you know, age 20 upwards, that if, you know you want to have a family someday, these are the things you need to be aware of. And that's something that we could be doing now, talking to people about their awareness around their fertility, because there's actually a huge lack of awareness around it. And people are always really surprised when they can't get pregnant through something that they didn't know existed within them.
Okay. Well, listen, thanks for helping us to raise the issue, and we'll watch on with interest to see where this goes. But as I say, it doesn't make any sense to me for them not to be engaging with established groups like yours with a wealth of information and, you know, knowledge in this area. Katrina, thanks for your time.
Great. Can I just say before I go that we do run information campaigns and we do run support groups. We'll tweet Highland Radio and the details of our next campaign, our next meeting, so that anybody listening who is going through this journey can attend the meeting. They're online. We also have a live web chat and we have a helpline, and we'll tweet those details to you this morning.
And we'll share those out. Thank you very much indeed. Katrina Fitzpatrick of the National Infertility Service Information Group. We had a contact from this listener who says, I'm a 67-year-old woman and I have a feeling I have high blood pressure. So after much pressure from my family, I called my GP last week to get an appointment to have it checked. Imagine my shock to be told the next available appointment for the doctor was the 3rd of April. If I wanted to see the nurse, it would be the 29th of March. Then the HSC are doing a campaign to say try all other routes before going to the ED. It's no wonder so many are in ED. There is no other route to be seen. So this is a text we got in Thursday, I think. It's just I didn't get to it on Thursday. They were told that the next appointment to see their local GP, the 1st of April, the 3rd of April, I beg your pardon. And if they wanted to see a nurse, the 29th of March. So I don't know, are they being triaged and they're saying, well, you know, blood pressure is not as important as everything else that we have to look at? I don't know. But it's a horrendous worry because the lady has decided that she needs to get this looked at, but she has to wait a couple of weeks in order to do so. Don't know what's going on there. All right, it's okay. We'll be back after the break with more. I'm sorry for everyone out there, but particularly animal lovers, because we've another story of animal cruelty, and it is another horrific story. Vivian Kelly is of Pet FBI Rescue and joins us on the programme now. Vivian, thanks for taking the call this Monday morning.
Good morning, Greg. Thank you for having us on.
Yeah, and this awful plight of this dog in Derry. Tell us what happened to it, please.
Luna was found in Derry and Ballyarn at Country Park on Wednesday night, and she had been buried alive. We've had a witness come forward who observed these two fellas who repeatedly beat Luna over the head with a curbstone. They continued to use the curbstone to hold Luna into a shallow grave, approximately about a foot deep, and they used the curbstone to hold her in there while they covered her over with dirt, and then they left Luna in the hole with rocks over her head and stones where Luna couldn't wrestle her way back up out through this hole.
I mean, again, this is similar to a story we were talking about earlier. It's horrendous that anyone would be capable of doing this. This is not a heat of the moment thing, and that would be no defence either, don't get me wrong, Vivian, but this is a sustained mistreatment of this poor dog. And yes. Anyone capable of that, you'd have to worry what else they might be capable of.
Yes. The dogs in that area, with him, he has been arrested now, but other dogs in that area would not have been safe. He did have three other dogs also in his care as well that were taken away by animal welfare and the police on Thursday night. So this is a man who has put several dogs through abuse. It hasn't been Luna. Luna's abuse also didn't just start on Wednesday night either. You know, this Luna was so thin. Luna had been starved and deprived of food for, I would say, quite a few months. We've had photos sent to ourselves of Luna back in October where Luna was skin and bones then. So this has been abuse that has been going on for months and months with Luna.
Yeah. And because, of course, this case will be before the courts, I'll speak generally. It's very important, is it not, that anyone that is found guilty and it's proven that they have been cruel to animals like this, that the sentence are of a nature that they act as a strong deterrent?
Yes. The sentence for this abuse needs to fit the crime as well. For what Luna has been through, it has been a barbaric attack on, you know, on Luna, and it's something that needs to be come down heavy upon with the law, and to send out a message to other people, you know, that this will not be tolerated, that, you know, the sentence needs to fit and be suited to what they have put Luna through. It has been a barbaric attack. It has been traumatic on Luna, what she's been through. For the other dogs, it was also in his possession as well. There's been months of abuse going on with them too. And this really, really needs to become down on heavy upon.
Yeah. More generally speaking, a few agencies reporting an increase in the number of animals being abandoned, attributing it to the cost of living crisis. Maybe they were animals that were taken on during lockdowns or what have you as well. Is this something you're seeing, something you're concerned about, Vivian?
There is a lot more animals now because of the cost of living. Yeah, certainly. And with a lot of people now going back into the office as well, you know, we are finding a lot of dogs coming through the rescue centre now that people don't have the time for anymore because, you know, they did through lockdown when they were working from home and everyone is back in the office again now. So that time isn't as freely there anymore to, you know, give dogs what they need. So, yeah. We're finding it's a lot of young dogs now under the age of 3 that are coming into our care, and it certainly is to do with the height of sales over lockdown.
Right, okay. Right, well, this has to go through the courts and we can perhaps speak afterwards again, but we can't do anything that might offer anyone a defence. So at this point, Vivian Kelly, and we have to point out as well, very sadly, Luna was put to sleep. She was released of the awful life that she had to endure. And as I say, sorry for upsetting people, but we have to talk about these things so they're called out and people spot things that they reported and it's not allowed to happen. Vivian, thanks for your time.
You're welcome. Thanks, Greg.
Vivian Bye-bye. Kelly, who is of a pet FBI rescue. 086 60 25,000, WhatsApps and texts that number. Keep us busy coming in already, but I want more. I want more of your opinions. Okay. Would you like to win €1,000 cash on Friday for a tenner? Be all right, wouldn't it? €10 for €1,000 cash. What about if we chucked in a €1,000 Atlantic travel voucher for a celebrity cruise booking? That'd be 2,000. That wouldn't be bad, would it, for a tenner? Right, well, that's what's up for grabs this week. If you go and buy your tickets in our Win a Holiday of a Lifetime with Highland Radio draw. But that's not all, you see, because what you win on Friday is a bonus. The actual prize is €10,000 travel voucher plus €5,000 cash in spending money. €5,000 cash in spending money. So the total prize pool pushing €20,000. You can get your tickets now for a tenner. If you want to buy more as gifts, you can get 6 for 50 or 10 for 80. You go onto our website, highlandradio.com and highlandradio.com and click on Win a Holiday and answer a simple question. Then you choose what tickets you want. But as I say, you could win €1,000 cash on Friday. On top of that, €1,000 of a celebrity cruise voucher to go towards your next cruise or maybe to take you on your first cruise. And that's just the bonus. The big prize is €10,000 of a travel voucher with €5,000 spending money. So if you are inclined to enter this competition, I'd suggest you do it sooner rather than later because then you are in for a chance to win those great prizes on Friday plus the big prize. €5,000 in cash, €10,000 travel voucher, or for just a tenner, if you have the spare tenner and you can afford it, of course, you can go onto our website, highlandradio.com. If you want to buy gifts for people, 6 for 50, 10 for 80, or you can buy them for yourself and put your names on them. It all depends on your disposable, doesn't it? So get on our website. If you don't want to use the website, by the way, and it's very, very simple, it's very, very safe, and it's very, very secure. But if you don't buy stuff online, give us a call right now on 074-91-25,000. But please be sure, if you're going to get a ticket, get it before Friday. And that means you're in for all of those prizes. And it's all people, local people that win them as well. And we want, we do look forward to announcing the winners on Friday and then the winner a little bit later on for the €10,000 voucher, €5,000 spending money. And just to remind you, by the way, you can go back and forwards from Portugal 7 or 8 times probably on that €10,000 voucher. Or you can go on one big marquee holiday. It's up to you. It's yours to dip in and out of as you see fit.